Suicide is preventable. It is not chosen, and it is momentary. It happens when pain exceeds the resources for coping with the pain. You are not a bad person. You are not crazy. You are not weak or flawed if you feel suicidal. It doesn't even mean that you really want to die. If you have ever seriously considered suicide, but didn't end your life with a period, use a semicolon to make a statement like, "I'm still here," or "My story isn't over." Talking to someone or calling a crisis line isn't a sign of weakness. It shows real strength to ask for help, and it shows real strength to be an ally. Help reduce the stigma around depression and suicidal ideation. You can get a visible semicolon tattoo or wear a button signifying you've been there and are willing to talk to someone who might be in crisis. Learn the early warning signs and help us put an end to self-harming, bullying, and suicide now. This podcast is dedicated to Regan Allen. I'm Scott Clapson, the community organizer here on KCIW. I'm here today with Gordon Clay, and we're talking about the Semicolon Project. How are you, Gordon?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. So I asked you here today to sit down and talk with me about Project Semicolon. Do you want to tell us about what that is?
Very much so. It's a project that was started back in April of 2013 by a young woman in the Midwest whose father committed suicide. And she got to thinking about that and says, basically, his life's over. That's a period at the end of his life. And what she did was she decided to start up a program for people that have seriously considered suicide but chose not to, and she made it the Semicolon Project, which basically says, I was going to commit suicide, I was serious about it, but I've decided not to. And I put a semicolon there and then say, my life's going on, or whatever my choice is for that. And it's a chance to really open up, for people to really open up and talk about the issue of suicide and take the stigma out from under it.
So why is it important, Gordon, to work on removing the stigma from people who have thoughts of suicide?
Well, one of the things is that particularly men don't talk. The 80% of suicide attempts are with women, but 80% of successful suicides are men, because we haven't set up the networks with friends that we can really talk about those things. We've been trained to tough it out, handle it, deal with it, and many other situations that have set us up, so it's not something that we're comfortable with. We don't set it up with families. The whole thing, women, on the other hand, generally are asking for help. And they're using things like drugs and strangulation and cutting to commit suicide, which is basically a request for help. Men don't ask for help. They just ensure, and almost always with a gun, that it's over.
Yeah. Well, and that's a startling statistic you just threw out there. 80% of suicide attempts are by women, but 80% of the people who succeed are men.
Yes.
Right? It's important to mention for our listeners that just because someone attempts suicide doesn't mean that they're going to be successful at it. And also talking about the resources, right? That's part of this whole Semicolon Project, and why we asked you to be here today on KCIW was to talk about the resources in our area, right? So
Right. When
people are feeling that way and they're having suicidal ideations or thoughts of suicide, that they can feel comfortable reaching out to people in the community that maybe have been through the same thing, that can offer them some help.
Well, that's one of the neat things about wearing a semicolon button or having a tattoo with a semicolon in it. It basically says that I've been there. I know what it's about. I'm willing to talk. I'm willing to open up. And this is really particularly important for veterans, because we're in a county that has the highest suicide rate of veterans in the state of Oregon. We're also in a county that is a very high, we've already had 10 suicides this year. 9 of them are by men, 9 of them All 9 of those were with a gun. And we are a gun culture that has 98% of our people live within 10 miles of a gun dealer. It's part of our culture. And the thing about a gun, unlike drugs or cutting or things like that, is 90% of the time it's fatal. You can't refire a gun. It's there. Drugs oftentimes are a cry for help. Well, so is strangulation, a cry for help. One of the things that I think is important is that I am amazed at how many people here in Curry County aren't aware that we've got our own 24/7 crisis center. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to give that number out now and sure. later on, because somebody might need it right okay. now. And it's a place to call to talk. You can also be suicidal, but one of the things about it is crisis lines are designed for that, but they're also designed to open up and talk when you've got an issue and you really need to get the anxiety or the depression or something out of there. And the number here in Curry County is 877-519-9322.
So, Gordon, do you want to repeat that number for us again, please?
Sure. It is 877-519-9322. And, of course, there are a number of other hotlines, like there's one specifically in the country. There are suicide hotlines for all kinds of things. I've actually got on my website over 30 different suicide hotlines. And there's ones for gay youth, and there's ones for veterans, particularly combat veterans, which is a totally different hotline, and then regular national hotlines if you don't want to be tied to a hotline in the county of Curry.
Yeah, I think that might make some people nervous, right? Calling someone that might just be a half hour up the street, right? Because I mm-hmm. think people... It's part of the reason sometimes maybe why people don't ask for help. I'm going to out myself in this podcast right now as someone who's struggled with suicidal ideations in my life and have called the national crisis line, the lifeline, a few times in my life, especially in this last couple of years after losing my dad and experiencing the grief that I've experienced. But it's really important to remember for people that calling that line isn't going to have the cops arrive at your door, right? They're really looking for... They might ask you if you have a plan or if you're going to hurt yourself. And if you don't, then they're really just, they want to talk, right? And they want to be a listening ear. And it's really important to reach out if you're listening and you feel like you need someone to talk to and you feel like you can't talk to anybody in your life.
One of the things I really like about the local one is they understand Southern Oregon and our community, which is different than a lot of communities, particularly if the national would tie into Dallas or New York or Chicago, something like that. It's a total different understanding of the culture that people are living in.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a confidential hotline anyway. So people are not going to be using the information. These are most likely therapists, and they are pledging confidentiality unless you are saying, I'm going to commit suicide right now.
Yeah.
And then they have to report that to hopefully save your life.
Well, actually, they will call you back yeah. because I've called them and was feeling hopeless and hung up the phone and they called me back. So they actually had my number. So they will ask your name, and the national ones do route you to someone in your local area. So you tell them like your zip code or something like that when you first call. There's some way to let them know. So they're getting you a volunteer or a paid counselor for these crisis okay. lines in your local state. So if I was to call again to Lifeline, I wouldn't be getting someone in Chicago or Texas. I'd be getting someone in Oregon.
Okay.
Or possibly really Northern California based on my location. So that's something to remember for people that are calling is... They probably will. Your number that you're calling from is going to show up on their end. Mm-hmm. But again, like you said, Gordon, unless you have a plan and let them know you have a plan, they're not going to notify the authorities. That's just if they feel your life is in danger.
Right.
And okay. oftentimes, most people that call, their life's not in danger. They're just feeling really, really hopeless, right? And they don't feel like they have anywhere else to turn. And most of the time, they're really good listeners.
Very good. I would like to tell the listeners about some more statistics.
Okay.
And that is with our youth. There's an annual survey that's done by the state of Oregon. It's done every single year. It's a confidential survey done with 6th, 8th, and 11th graders in all schools in Oregon. In the last survey of the 2013-14 school year, 7.7% of 6th graders, 18% of 8th graders, and 28.7% of 11th graders had seriously considered suicide in the 12 months before the survey. I think that's one of the reasons that Curry Health has put in a full-time therapist up at the high school. She's up there 5 days a week. And for anybody that is concerned about their child or any child that is concerned about the stigma around going to the health center or having an appointment there, they need to know that this is a really safe place to go talk about issues that are coming up in the family or your own life issues or whatever's up for you. Mm-hmm. It's available now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stigma around mental health issues and concerns in this county and nationwide, right? We live in a culture right now that's based a lot on positivity. And if you're struggling, it can be really hard to find someone that you can reach out to and talk about the struggles that you're going through. And youth do experience struggles just like everyone else.
One of the things that I think is really important, again, particularly for men, because women already have a friends network and they're used to talking about things, but men don't. And women are usually concerned about the family, their family, and the impact that their suicide would have on the family. And men don't get to that place. What's important for men is most of us have a sports buddy or some kind of a buddy that we play ball with or play cards or something like that with. But they're not really somebody that we could go to, or we haven't set it up to be somebody that we could really go to when I go through a divorce or I lose my house or my child is having trouble with the law. And we tend to hold that in and take it in. And what I believe is that every man should find at least one man in their life that they can tell anything to, and then use that man. That's the only thing that saved my life, I believe, is that somebody got me to somebody to take care of me from a therapist standpoint, which in 1976 was really things that men didn't do, and the only reason they went to therapy is their wife forced them to go on relational issues. And they went on an emotional issue. And then that therapist got me with realizing that I did have a good friend that would be there for me. I just thought he was a buddy. And he walked with me anytime I needed it, day or night. And he told me at the end of each time we got together, he said, "Promise me that you won't commit suicide before you talk to me." That made me stay with my integrity, and even in those times that I was really pushed emotionally to that level, I felt required to call him, and I'd call him, and he'd talk me down. And that's what saved my life. That, I think, is the only reason I'm here today, and that was 41 years ago.
So you yourself have struggled with thoughts of suicide.
I sure did.
Yeah. So that would be, right, this program, the community organizers, based around volunteering in the community and people who do volunteering. You people might be familiar with you from your bullying work and raising awareness about bullying in the community here in the Brookings Harbor area in Curry County. Thank you for that, by the way. This is tied to it in many ways, and thank you for sharing. So back in 1976, you were feeling suicidal.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was there.
And it was a friend and a therapist, both who helped you.
Actually,
overcome that.
I called my medical doctor and about 8 o'clock at night, and he immediately got me a therapist who came over that night to talk me down and work with me. And then we started the process. And every now and then I would get to that point that this isn't worth it. I'm a loser. I'm an executive in an advertising agency, and I can't deal with the image. You know, I can't handle the situation that I got myself in, and I might as well just off myself. And I had those two avenues, the therapist and a friend, to be there when I needed him.
It's really important, that support network. You've mentioned that a few times, right? And whether you're male or female, or you're a young person or an older person, or you're a veteran, or you're experiencing a different type of ability level, or struggling with depression, having that support network is really, really important to helping overcome these feelings of hopelessness.
Right. And particularly if it's just one person, you know, all you need is one person. And it's nice to have more in case that person's on vacation or whatever, but to have one person that you can really get down to the deep stuff, the troubling stuff, and talk about it.
Yeah, I myself have worked on developing support relationships with more than one person for that reason in particular. Thank you for being so open about sharing your story, Gordon, because facts and things are really important. But I think the piece that helps people in situations like this is the personal stories, right? And I think that's why this Project Semicolon is such an awesome thing, because it's encouraging people. I'm scared of needles, so I'm not going to get a tattoo. But I certainly, like right now, the semicolon picture is on my Facebook page as we're doing this podcast. It's really important for people to share their stories, because that's really what transforms people and helps them realize that, oh, I'm not the only one, right? In the past of me sharing my story about my suicidal ideations, it's helped other people that are in a situation like me, because unlike you, who you had felt like you had gotten yourself into that situation, I grew up in a church that didn't accept me for being queer. And I was shamed by family members and by people in my church, and sent to counseling and anointed with oil and prayed over, because I was experiencing this temptation of sin that I had no control over. I wasn't choosing it, right? But I came out at 15 years old. And so I wrote my first letter, my first suicide letter at 15. I've never actually attempted suicide, but I've had a lot of thoughts over it over the years, because I felt trapped because of the environment that I was raised in. And I thought, you know, how could God love me? Those same thoughts of, I'm a loser, you know, why can't I get over this attraction to the same gender and things like that. And it's taken me a lot of counseling and a lot of therapy to realize that the problem wasn't me, that it wasn't a reflection on me, but right, I was so young, I didn't know. And so I carried that with me into adulthood, and that shame into adulthood, because I didn't understand that it really had nothing to do with me. It wasn't my belief. I still believe that God loves me very much and just the way I am, right? But it took me a long time to get to that point.
Well, and I think if people realize that if they're pointing a finger at somebody, to look at their hand and see how many fingers are pointing at them.
Well, I think that's a whole other podcast. The Finger Pointing Project. Just to add a little humor into this serious podcast. But yeah, it's really important for people to know that they can reach out, right? And if you don't have a plan in place, and you can say, hey, I'm having these thoughts and I'm really feeling hopeless and I'm thinking about ending my life, and it's okay to call a crisis line, or it's okay to make an appointment with a counselor. You know, Curry Community Health has great counselors, and reaching out to someone and telling them how you're feeling hopeless, so someone can help you, right? Because people can't help. If we don't make our need known, even to one other person, no one can help us if we're holding it all on our own, right? We need to reach out for someone to help us share our burden. It'll make it a little bit easier to carry.
Yeah, I was reminded of the song, Bill Withers, Lean on Me. If we really listen to that song and take it in and know that there are a lot of brothers out there, and for women, a lot of women out there that are open and willing to listen. And I think that's an important thing. If you do ask for somebody, or if somebody comes to you and asks you to listen to them, they're in crisis, they're having a problem, then it's important to really listen. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lost art in our community with texting and emails and all of that kind of stuff. We aren't used to listening anymore. Without giving advice, without giving suggestions, without saying, oh, it's okay, or get better, or, you know, handle it, or any of that kind of BS, really sit and listen and offer to help find a therapist or find information or whatever. But listen and let them talk and let them be open about their anxiety, their depression, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's really important, the whole listening without giving advice, right? Because that can be really, really detrimental to someone who's feeling hopeless if the wrong thing gets said to them or someone just says, just buck up, you know, keep your chin up. That can be the thing that makes them feel like pulling back into their shell because they can't keep their chin up. That's why they're reaching out for help.
Right.
They're feeling lost and they're feeling hopeless and they're feeling like they want to hurt themselves. And it's really coming from a place of compassion, of listening and letting this person be heard.
Yep.
Yeah. So you've seen a therapist, obviously, for your suicidal ideations when you were younger in your life. I've seen a therapist. I'm hoping that this podcast will sort of demystify that as well, because sometimes I hear comments from people that they don't know that therapy works, or they're not really sure that if therapy's, you know, that's not for people who are strong. If you're strong enough, you don't need to see a therapist. And that's kind of a myth or a misnomer, right? That therapy isn't for people who are weak. Therapy is for people that really need support and need someone to talk to that's impartial, right? Sometimes, and talking to friends, sometimes they have a different perspective than someone that's outside of our immediate relationships, and building that relationship with a counselor or a therapist that we trust, right? I have a therapist in here in town that I have a relationship with, that I know that ultimately if I'm experiencing something, I can reach out to her and make an appointment to go see her. And it's really important for people that have experienced these thoughts in the past to build that relationship, not just with a person in their life, but also with a mental health professional.
I think anybody that, when you think about it, if you go to a friend, your friend is dealing with only the experiences they've had in their life.
Mm-hmm.
A therapist is dealing with all of the experiences that they've dealt with their clients.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a much wider perspective, and then they've got a professional perspective that they've spent several years in school learning what the outcomes are and what the situations are. So you get somebody that is really more knowledgeable and can give you better advice for your own healing. One of the things that I've said very often is, reveal it to heal it. As long as I kept it inside and kept in some stuff about my early childhood being abused as a child, as long as I kept that inside, it just boiled inside of me, and it would trigger other things. Once I brought that out, it gave me the opportunity to really calm that down and let go of that piece. Somebody else has my secret, and now it's not a secret anymore, and it's free, and it can turn down the heat, so it's not boiling anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And absolutely, when that, I know people recently, there's a few people in my life that have lost people to suicide in this last year. And it's interesting the impact that it has on people and the hole that it leaves, right? Because there's not a way to help them, right? And sometimes people have expressed it, right? People in my life have talked to me about that, that they're nervous that what if Scott does something to hurt himself? Because it's a real struggle, right? Some of us struggle with it because of circumstances in our life for long periods of time, because we feel hopeless because of circumstances that in our lives or different things like that. And just sort of demystifying that and helping people realize that they're not going to be locked up in a mental ward for 72 hours or taken to the Curry County Jail and locked up for 72 hours just because they tell someone that they're feeling hopeless and need help, right? And that's really important to reiterate in this podcast, is just because you reach out and say that you're feeling hopeless and are thinking of ending your life, if you don't have a plan, you're not going to end up in a holding cell or a mental ward, for 72 hours on a psychological hold if you don't have a plan, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's really important to reiterate.
And very few people, when they're suicidal, have a plan.
Yeah.
And they really, most of them are in a mode of 1 hour. And most suicides happen within 1 hour of hitting that wall. If we can interrupt that any time in that hour, we've got a chance to shift it. Sometimes people misfire, or they take the wrong drugs or not enough of them, or they strangle themselves, but it doesn't hold. Somebody gets to them in time, mm-hmm. and it saves them. But if we can find another way in there also to get them on hold, it gives us a real opportunity to change a life. And one of the things about suicide is that it hurts more people than the people that commit suicide. Mm-hmm. It hurts family, friends, communities that are really saddened by your loss. And we wouldn't want that to happen I don't want that to happen to any more people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one quick story is that the man that walked with me any time that I needed it, my friend, that was in 1976. In 1982, I got a letter from a Christmas card from his wife saying he took his life by his own hand. And I didn't get the chance to do for him what he did for me. And it still upsets me that men in my life, women in my life, people in my life don't open up when they get to that place.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? It's hard. It's not so easy,
right?
We live in a culture where people are watching Dancing with the Stars and, you know, The Apprentice and Donald Trump's running for president, you know, all these things. And we live in a very entertainment-based society where, you know, it's a very feel-good society. And if you don't feel good and you're feeling hopeless, oftentimes it gets disregarded, right? You can click unfollow on Facebook and all of a sudden you don't have to see anything that person posts, because they might be going through a crisis and you just can't be bothered, right? And we live in that kind of society right now in the United States where it is that kind of mentality of, well, I just don't want to be bothered with you because you're inconveniencing my life and my good time. And not all of us are like that. There's a lot of compassionate people, but that is sort of the culture that we live in, is it's just really easy to press delete or block on the internet. And all of a sudden that person's out of your life and you don't have to think about them.
If I can't do it in 140 words, I can't deal with you.
Oh my gosh, I can't do anything in 140 words, Gordon.
Well, that's Twitter. You know, that's the culture of Twitter.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not on Twitter. I'm just on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
I'm Scott Clapson, the community organizer here on KCIW. If you enjoy these podcasts, we ask that you donate. KCIW is a nonprofit, and we do appreciate your donations. So, Gordon, as we move into the second half of the podcast, I'm really curious, right? Because before you were doing the bullying stuff, right? And bringing awareness to bullies. But now you've got rat cards and buttons and, you know, these new semicolon cards all over the community. Why do you do this? Why do you spend so much time trying to bring awareness, right? Because I know that people see you at school board meetings or city council meetings or different things like this, but this is all volunteer, right? You're just doing this out of the goodness of your heart because you have compassion for people who are going through a hard time. Why are you doing this? Why are you investing so much money in getting these semicolon cards around the community?
Well, my therapist said that people who have been physically and sexually abused, which both happened to me from my stepmother, are really bothered by injustice, and injustice in any way. And I've always had that, quote, problem. I've lived in Chicago. I had my daughter and my wife in the car on the west side of Chicago. I saw some young I saw some young men attack a bus driver across the street. I ran the light. I ran up on the curb, and I chased three guys down an alley. I didn't realize that somebody else followed me and was backing me up. Foolish thing. I've got a six-month-old child. I've got my wife in the car. I'm going after somebody that, three kids down an alley, that, why? Well, I've done that too many times in my life, of stepping into a situation, an abuse, a domestic violence situation in a line at a movie theater. And I finally just decided, hey, I got to let go of it. If it comes up, I've got to deal with it. I'm not afraid of stepping up and saying something.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking both the City Council of Brookings and the Curry County Commissioners to do a proclamation for September for Suicide Prevention Month, but that sort of came on top of one that I was planning to do anyway on Bully Prevention Month in October. I got both of them through on both at both locations, and I get home and I'm thinking, I've got a lot of stuff on bullying, and then I saw the semicolon, a tattoo. Pause. And then I saw a semicolon tattoo and an internet thing about it. And I'm thinking, I want to do a rack card on this and make it available to local people to talk about the semicolon and why it's there and what it stands for. And then that went on to, actually the very first thing I did was a little window decal. A 1 1/4-inch window decal that's white and all it's got on it is a semicolon. And that went into getting buttons made and then a rack card made. And in fact, I got, about a week ago, I created a regular business card, which on one side is just black and the semicolon, and on the other side it talks about it. And yesterday when you and I were talking, and it came up that, and you weren't aware of the 24/7 crisis line, I thought, that should be on the card, particularly for distribution of cards locally. I kept thinking about it this morning. I couldn't finish my sleep. I got up, put it on a card, ordered more Vistaprint cards, and in a week and a half, I'm going to have those, and those are going to be the cards I'm going to distribute locally.
Okay.
All of this comes out of my Social Security. It makes it tough, but it's something that it's like, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. And if I can save a life, I want to do that. And I'm still dealing with that early psychological issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good thing for me about being abused as a child, because it turned into a real call in my life to help other people instead of just living off my income and swimming and going to Puerto Vallarta. I've got a purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's
a beautiful purpose, right? It's amazing how pain and adversity that happens to us can make us better, right? Because you do a lot, right? If people don't know, you have these rack cards and these buttons, right? Because we have some that we dropped off at the food bank. Mm-hmm. And there are some that have been dropped off at St. Timothy's. And we have some here at the Chetco Activity Center. And they're around town, right? And so people can take these little white buttons with the black semicolon and wear them. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to get a tattoo. And also the rack card has a lot of information about people who may be feeling hopeless and having thoughts of suicide, right?
It does a couple of things. And the window decal, if you clean the window, it's not a sticker. They're pretty expensive for stickers. But a window decal to put on your car. Mm-hmm. And the other thing it says is not only are you willing to talk to people, but look how many people have really considered suicide. How many people in management, in corporations, Esposito in the sheriff's department, comes out and talks about it. If we see all of these people that are successful people in the world, but realize that they went through a period in their life that was very serious and they almost considered suicide, it breaks down that stigma again. A lot of people are there. People have said that virtually everybody has considered suicide at one time in their life. I don't know about that's true or not, but almost everybody I talk to, and I don't think it's just my crowd of people, I think it is just about everybody I talk to, has considered suicide at one time in their life. If we get that out, and people that are suicidal realize that they're not the only one. Mm-hmm. I thought I was the only one that had been physically and sexually abused as a man until I started coming out with other men and men's groups and that kind of thing, and realizing there are a lot of us mm-hmm. out there. All we have to do is talk to each other.
Yeah. I thought I was the only young gay little boy that didn't have any hope and felt like I was the only one, right? Yeah. And then I ended up out of school in Los Angeles at a university, and turns out 20-something years later, a number of the people that I knew that were in the closet at this Christian university are out. And it's really amazing that there's now, it's underground. They're not open on the campus, but there is a group for students who are going to this university. It's Azusa Pacific University in Azusa, California. And these groups for LGBTQ young people that are on these campuses come, I guess they call it the Lavender Railroad, I guess. They're working with these young people that feel trapped. They grew up in Christian homes and they've been shamed their whole lives, right? Like I was, for being gay, for being queer. And they end up, you know, living these lives and feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't talk to anybody. And then they can find a safe spot, right? And these groups are developing all over the country on these Christian college campuses and Christian university campuses to help these young people that, like me, 20-something years ago, was on one of these Christian college campuses going, who do I talk to? Yeah. Thankfully, I was able to go to a counselor there at Azusa Pacific who helped me and said, hey, Scott, have you thought that maybe this is how God really made you and that you're okay and that you're not a loser and you're not worthless? But I was 22 by the time that happened, right? Up until that point, that had never been told to me by a counselor or a therapist. I thought there was something wrong with me, that somehow I needed to correct this to live the life that I was supposed to live in God's will. And so, yeah, it's really awesome that there are people out there, whatever our situation is for feeling hopeless and whatever the reasons are. Because, right, I think a lot of people, whether they experience thoughts of suicide, we all can identify with feeling hopeless. Right. Everybody can. And that's definitely a statement I feel comfortable making. And so just kind of starting there and just talking, right, and one-on-one about it and being open about it to people so they don't feel so alone.
Well, the other thing I'd like the community to think about is that most likely, but I will say to everybody that's listening to this podcast, that you know somebody who's a gay or lesbian, and you know them as a very close friend. The thing is that you don't know that they're gay or lesbian.
Or transgender or transgender, right. Or bisexual, right. Or asexual. You right. know, there's all sorts of, right. you know, intersectionality with that. Right. Yeah, of course, there's a lot of us.
Actually, I think we focus in on gay, lesbian, and bi. And heterosexual is gender. And that's where the suicides come from.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't get support, and they think there's just one or two gay people in school, and those are the people that are out. I think one of the things that's important to understand when we're talking about the lesbian, gay, trans issue is that we probably all know somebody who is in that community. We probably have a very good friend who's LGBT. And we don't know it because it's not safe for them to come out. This goes all the way to the children, that there are many children that are LGBT, and they're the ones that are much higher risk of suicidal tendencies, 40% higher than heterosexual kids. And we have to really be safe, make this a safe community for all children to be unique and be who they are.
Yeah, it's really important. I remember there was a young woman when I was in school here yesterday when we met to talk about this podcast. I shared her story with you. And I remember she was in my English class. And I remember she used to get harassed a lot. And I always felt bad for her, right? Because I knew that I was queer from the time I was a little boy, right? It was never a secret to me. I was just scared to talk to people about it. And I remember after she committed suicide, people being so puzzled and shocked. And my heart just went out to her. And I was so saddened, right, by what she had gone through. And people just couldn't understand why. And it was like, well, because you were calling her names every day, right? Like, people were calling her lesbo and dyke and all of these things. And people don't realize, right, even the, that's so gay, right? I hear that from people. And it hurts, right? Because it's a, they say that it doesn't mean anything, but at the same time, they're using it to describe something they don't like. And they don't realize those, it's called microaggressions, right? I don't know if you're familiar with that term, Gordon, but microaggressions build up over time. And these things that, if it doesn't impact you, you don't really realize it and you don't feel it. But when you're a member of the LGBTQ community and you hear these things over and over again, or statements get made and people think, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter, you don't matter. It does, though, because we're people, right? And it hurts us and it builds up over time. And that can add to the feeling of hopelessness and feeling lost and feeling isolated. And there are a lot of young gay people in this community. And I think it's gotten better, right? I was at the high school in the last couple of years, and there was a young male gay couple that was holding hands in the hallway, and nobody seemed to bat an eye. That wouldn't have happened in the 90s when I was there. And it's amazing to me that it's changed, but we still have a long way to go. And my heart goes out to those young people in Curry County and all over the world that are feeling trapped, right? Because of their sexuality, and they feel like nobody loves them, and they feel like God doesn't care about them, and they feel like they can't talk to their family about that. It's really important that we find the support for them, right? Because it's not going to change. No amount of therapy, no amount of praying over them is going to make them all of a sudden be attracted to someone of the opposite gender. And it's painful, right? It's really painful. And just acknowledging that there's so many young people that commit suicide because of the fact that they're LGBTQ and they don't have to. They don't have to end their lives because they're queer. And I'm just hoping that some people in the community that are listening to this and maybe had a different viewpoint, maybe can start having some compassion and start treating people a little bit differently, and start seeing people with love rather than contempt and judgment.
Well, and that goes for a lot of kids that are a little more effeminate or a little more masculine, girls that are a little more masculine.
Because that doesn't make you LGBTQ, right?
No.
Just because you're effeminate doesn't mean that you're gay, and just because you're masculine doesn't mean that you're a lesbian.
Right. And I know one of the things, and it's been a number of years since I've seen this research, but the biggest thing for a elementary school boy to have him be called is fag. He doesn't understand it. The people that call him fag don't understand what it means. They just know that that's a word that is bad, and there's something wrong with them. And when this carries on, there are a lot of kids that are in that realm of boys that are a little more effeminate, girls that are a little more masculine, that whole kind of thing, that grow up with that stigma of people's opinions of them, calling them some kind of a name that doesn't represent them. Some it represents, some it doesn't. That's one of the powerful things, I think, with the word queer, that at least the area I came from the last 26 years was in Marin County in San Francisco. And the community there was, people were calling each other queer on purpose and being proud to be called queer. And people outside were saying, well, but that's such a bad name. And they said, well, it was, but it isn't anymore because we're taking the power of that word. But the poor kid in elementary school or in middle school or in high school that has those names either whispered or called out loud isn't there yet. And the damage, the real damage comes now that we've got cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. And I know in the Healthy Teen Survey, and I don't have the numbers here right now, but I know that in the area of harassment, over 50% of the kids feel harassed, and a big percentage of those were harassed by gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's still there, and it's still a pressure, and it's still hurtful, whether they're LGBT or not.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts everybody.
Yeah.
And it's homophobic for those of us who have to say, well, just tough it up, you know, be strong, don't let it bother you. And I think...
Or that's not what I meant by that when I said that so gay.
It was just
I just say that.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Well, because people know, right? When you say that, I don't think that little kids don't know. I think they know, right? Because I remember when I was a kid, grew up on Iris Street over here below the old Flying Gull. Now O'Reilly Auto Parts is right there. Yeah. But down Iris Street when I was a kid, they used to play Smear the Queer in the field that's now all those mobile homes right below Iris Street. They used to play Smear the Queer there when I was little. They knew what they were doing. They knew the statements
How
they
were
making.
They?
We were in, you know, elementary school, middle school. I mean, we were young.
Well, middle school I can see, but...
little kids, right?
Yeah.
I remember being in elementary school. People know, right?
Yeah.
I think saying that kids don't realize, they might not understand all the nuances of what sexuality is, but they know that fag and faggot and... all of these things, they know those are derogatory terms, right?
Well, they know they're derogatory.
Right? And they know that it's a put down, and they know that, oh, well, you're disgusting because you're a fag, or I'm going to call you that, right? Mm-hmm. They might not know all the sexuality behind it and all those connotations, but they know that, well, that's bad, right?
They know I don't question that at all. They know that it's bad. There just isn't an understandable why it's bad.
Yeah. Well, I think even some of them do, right?
Well,
I think there's a lot of, there's a lot more, this is my hometown, and there's a lot more homophobia here than I would like to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, things that get said and statements that get made by people that I don't think they think anything other than, well, we're just living in our little corner of the world in Brookings Harbor, and, you know, we don't have to be like everybody else. And I think it's really important to remember that there are a lot of people, and there's a lot of people that have moved here from other places that are LGBTQ, that are adults, right? And they're out, and they're proud, and they're not scared. And I'm not scared, right? And I think the more of us that are able to identify, you know, whether that's stigma around being LGBTQ or suicidal ideations or depression or bipolar or whatever the situation is that someone's in, we don't live in a community where everybody's exactly the same, and thinking that everybody's exactly the same and has all the same needs in the Brookings Harbor area isn't true, right? There's a lot of us here that have very different experiences. And, I think that's really important to remember that we're not all the same, and, we're not all Christians either. Right. And that's okay too, that just because someone maybe isn't a Christian, that they're still all right. And they still have value as well.
Well, and what they need to think about, particularly if they have children, is most of the children that graduate from the high school don't stay in Brookings. They leave, they go to other communities. And what they are going to be faced with is a very much a different culture than here.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to prepare their kids for the world. The world's much different than Brookings, Oregon.
Oh my gosh, yes. I remember in 93 when I graduated. What happened? I left Brookings and it was like, wow, there's a whole world out here that's so different than where I grew up. So Gordon, as we come to the end of the podcast, I know that you brought a lot of notes with you and stuff today. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about?
In closing, I want to read you the statement that we've got on the back of the calling card. Suicide is preventable, it is not chosen, and it is momentary. It happens when pain exceeds the resources to coping with pain. You're not a bad person or crazy or weak or flawed if you feel suicidal. It doesn't even mean that you really want to die. If you've ever seriously considered suicide but didn't end your life with a period, use a semicolon to make that statement like, I'm still here, semicolon, my story's not over. And you can get these semicolon buttons and decals and cards and rack cards for free by going to www.thecitizenswhocare.org/semicolon.html.
Awesome. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Gordon Clay, for all that you do. I'm really happy that you were here in this community and that you give so much of your time and resources to fight injustice. It's really awesome.
Thanks for the invite.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to KCIW. I'm Scott Clapson, the community organizer. If you enjoy these podcasts, we encourage you to donate to KCIW. We are a nonprofit, and we do appreciate your donations. Thanks for listening, and work on building that support network, everybody. And reach out and try and be a good listener. You never know who needs it. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign to help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.